Welcome to Quantum of Solace. We have so much that we need to talk about, or at least I would want to talk about, but we have to begin, I guess, with the Olympics. Al, do you watch them?
Do you know what? I just can't really get interested. I don't know, maybe I've just become really old and grumpy, but I'm not inspired by them at all.
That's annoying, because I was kind of hoping that we'd find something to disagree about. because, listen, folks, the Olympics, okay, I know that I could start watching and I'd really get into it. And there are some of you who are watching Serbia versus Brazil water polo at 2 a.m. and finding it completely fascinating. And there are, how will I put it, quirky things like that. There are brilliant things like Adam, the boy from England, who just, that was a fantastic swim.
Yeah, Adam Peaty, he was good. I saw a good clip of him. He's broke the world record again. And we got our first gold in the diving. Britain seems to be doing okay in the medals.
And you've got good things. You know, you've got the two American synchronized divers or whatever professing their identity in Christ, which was lovely. You've got the Brazilian girl from the favela who won in judo. You have a lot of what is good in humanity. But the reason I don't buy into it at all, actually, and I'm just not interested, I really am not interested, is just the wider picture. When you see the wider picture, the absolute corruption, and it's not just the Russians.
Yeah.
What's going on in Brazil, and in particular the protests there and so on, the billions that have been spent on it with the poor and everything else in Brazil, that for me is a major, major factor.
Did you see any of the opening ceremony? Because you and I both liked the opening ceremony at London. Did you catch any of this?
No. I really have that level of interest that I avoid it. I mean, me, I'm excited about the sport today because England are playing Pakistan at cricket. So
that's what we can disagree about. It just leaves me cold.
I'm sorry, I refuse to speak to Philistines. Test match cricket is art and culture and intelligence and sport and spirituality all wound together. But the Olympics, I'm sorry. I mean, I know that some of you listening to this have absolutely loved it. I acknowledge there are many, many good things in it, but I just can't get the background out of my head.
There's some interesting things in it. Like, for example, and it's kind of a sign of the modern age when you've got like the North Koreans and the South Koreans taking a selfie together.
Yeah, you know? That's a good
one. I mean, what do you make of the churches that are using the Olympics as a form of evangelistic outreach?
And yeah, I have no objection. I mean, by whatever means, you know, to the Jews, I became as a Jew. Uh-huh. To those who like the Olympics, I became as those who like the Olympics. It depends how it's done and what's being said. I do think there is one cultural observation that's very, very interesting. This could be the last Olympics where we have proper men's and women's sport. That is a real possibility, because the American Olympic team, the men's team, have a transgender woman who's now a man on their team.
Yeah.
The trouble is if it goes the other way.
Well, absolutely. And actually that...
And then that finishes women's sport, yeah. Is done. The reason I say that is because the International Olympic Committee has changed its criteria. So instead of having to wait 2 years, instead of having to have undergone surgery, you don't have to. What you about self-declare.
What about the female athletes who complain that that is not fair? They've got a point.
I know. Well, no, of course they're right. Of course they're right. It's completely insane. That may not happen, because really all that's happening here is gesture politics. It's the Americans who are driving this. And I don't just mean the American Olympic Committee. I mean the American corporations.
Nike adverts.
Starbucks, yeah. And so on. And it's money that drives the Olympics. That's why I don't like it. Yeah. Speaking of money. What you think this world is coming to? What you think the
Hinkley Point C, the new nuclear power station that's been funded by the French company EDF, who are backed by the Chinese. The Chinese have been rattling some sabres, and Theresa May's kind of put the whole thing on hold. She's investigating whether it's worthwhile, and the Chinese government have basically said, go ahead, or you can kiss goodbye all the other trade deals.
Yeah, and it's fascinating. Now, I don't know what to make of Theresa yet, whether she's Saint Theresa or whatever, but this is one thing. I am so impressed with her, because I thought David Cameron was such a wuss, and Osborne, in rolling over to the Chinese, leaving aside the rights and wrongs of nuclear power itself. And personally, I'm inclined to think it might be necessary. You can argue for and against, but what is wrong with Hinckley is it ties us into something which we are paying about three times the odd, fixed rate guaranteed, EDF, it doesn't cost them a thing.
The UK taxpayers and consumers would be paying an artificially high price for electricity generated from this plant for the next 35 years.
Yeah, and here's the other thing. People say, oh, well, this is good for the British nuclear industry. No, it's not. It saves the French nuclear industry, which is very large, because 90% of the work will be undertaken by French companies. It is a massive, massive white elephant. I'll be amazed if the British government continues to stand up. But I'll tell you this, if Theresa May does stand up to the Chinese and this gets stopped, Maggie Thatcher, watch out. Your reputation is in danger, because I'll tell you this, she's got more guts than any of the prime ministers before her. I admire it. I hope it continues.
And that's why we've got to keep praying for our leaders, our prime ministers. Pray for all those in authority over us.
One of my favourite songs, by a mile. In fact, the live performance of this, I think it was in Chicago, after the Omaha bombings, Sunday Bloody Sunday. You know, it's an incredible song because it expresses phenomenal anger against the IRA as well as against the British Army and so on. I mean, Sunday Bloody Sunday, that's been in the news again because...
It was kind of those iconic moments in television, and the television footage at the time had this Catholic priest waving a white handkerchief and basically trying to help people pull bodies out.
It's an incredible photo, and that priest, who's now Bishop Edward Daly, died.
He passed away last week.
Yeah, last week. He is actually a fascinating character, because sometimes people will complain, well, the Catholic Church didn't condemn the IRA. He did, and he had phenomenal courage. So I've got a great deal of time for him. And, you know, we do mourn his passing.
Flames of scarlet standing high. If he gets false, we'll never die. Though cowards flinch and try to sneer, we'll keep the red flag flying near.
The Labour Party, of which I used to be a member.
Okay, you've...
outed myself. I once voted Tory. I've been in the Labour Party and the SNP.
And you...
And the Liberals.
And the SDP. Mm-hmm. You're balanced.
I'm balanced. I'm totally balanced. Well, or totally unbalanced. But what is going on in the Labour Party?
The Labour Party... What is going on in the Labour Party? I mean, the large majority of Labour MPs have decided that they hate Jeremy Corbyn, that if he continues as leader, they will be unelectable for a generation, and they're trying to get rid of him. And they're trying fair means and foul. They've tried to prevent their members from voting in the current leadership election between Jeremy Corbyn and Owen Smith, because they know that the majority of the Labour Party members favour Corbyn.
Yeah. And I think here's the interesting thing for me. I look at Corbyn and I see, as far as I can see, a fundamentally decent person, you know, and it seems to me an honest person. I think that he hasn't a chance of becoming Prime Minister. That's one thing. But Owen Smith and others, you know, when I look at what the Labour Party hierarchy has become, or MPs overall, it does seem as though they are this kind of mega professional, organized political elite, and they've lost touch with their members. The irony is that they are tied in with the establishment now, and they are in enormous danger come the next election. If they don't get their act together, and if Brexit hasn't happened by then, they're in enormous danger of being wiped out in Scotland by the SNP and wiped out in the north of England by UKIP.
If UKIP can get themselves organised enough.
Yeah, who are just, they're almost in as much of a mess. It really is quite extraordinary.
Said you, I'm living in my fantasy. It's you who are blinded from reality. And the material world means so much to you. You just can't get
Speaking of extraordinary, let's just do a couple of cultural things. One is the ubiquitousness, again, of the LGBT agenda. And let's mix up Brexit and everything else. Boris, what has Boris done now?
Boris. The British Foreign Secretary, Boris Johnson, has lifted a ban on foreign embassies and High Commission offices from flying the rainbow flag whenever there's a gay pride event going on. And it's going to be interesting to see what individual ambassadors do in countries where, for example, gay pride events are not allowed to be happen because of official policy of the country.
The idea of him lecturing countries in that way is one thing. But here's the thing. Philip Hammond, the previous foreign secretary, had refused to do that because we only fly flags of national states, not particular causes. And what Boris is doing here, and it is virtue signalling, but he's elevating this to the cause celebre, not only of liberal elites in the West, but throughout the world. And doubtless Hillary will do the same, and others will do the same. Is that a rainbow I see above London town? Is that a rainbow I see above Kingston town? Is that a rainbow I see above Amsterdam? Is that a rainbow? My other objection is this. Don't take our flag. Because the rainbow is the covenant sign that God will not destroy the earth completely because of the immorality of mankind. Yeah. What a nerve you have. But, I mean, take that flag to celebrate immorality, sexual immorality. And I'm sorry, folks, that's what is happening.
Most LGBTI activists have no concept of what the rainbow originally meant.
Yeah.
When they're sitting there waving it, it's like they're taunting God with his own promise, saying, ha-ha, you promised not to destroy the whole world again.
And the interesting thing as well is their idea of rainbow is, look, it's different cultures, it's diversity. Actually, the very thing they don't want is diversity. They want every country to have exactly their morality. Feels like a thief in the night. Came and carried your blanket away. You keep reaching for cover because you're naked as a newborn babe. Yeah, yeah. Got your eyes wide open, but you can't really see a thing. Staring up at a new moon, so afraid of what the season will bring. We haven't had my household. We haven't had a TV or a TV license for years. We bought a new slimline TV, decided to buy the license. In some sense, I'm glad to be able to see the 10% of stuff that's decent. But my goodness, honestly, you look at some stuff. I mean, there's Channel 4, and none of our listeners need to see it. You just need the description, Naked Attraction. What's it about, Al?
Do you know what? This is a mirror of our culture, I think. It's not just leading the culture. This is just reflecting the culture. Mm-hmm. Basically, it's a variation on a dating game. A woman gets to choose from six guys. A man gets to choose from six women. Their faces are hidden. They're in a box. And it involves full frontal nudity. It is a sign, really, of how sexual immorality is being elevated, and we're boasting in our sin,
yeah.
Basically.
And it works the other way too, because, I mean, it's the man picks the woman and all this kind of stuff. Doubtless people will justify it, saying it's risque and so on. But I read an article in The Independent justifying it. I think The Spectator had it much better, just ridiculing it, just an excuse to show naked bodies to get ratings up, which is the reason for it.
Yeah.
Forget all the, you know, avant-garde sociological interpretations. It makes us feel more comfortable in our bodies and all the rest of it. What's wrong with this? It's not the naked body. It's not the human body. It is the commodification of humanity, picking people based upon, if you like, bits of their body. It is profoundly demeaning. It's profoundly abusive. It is totally disgusting. We wonder why we end up in a society where we have slavery reintroduced because of our sexual ethics.
It is the promotion of a completely shallow and superficial view of relationships. It is the promotion of the physical. There's no consideration of character. There's no consideration of personality. If sex is what God says it is, then this kind of elevation of lust is totally corrosive to the human soul. I mean, it robs us of contentment. It robs us of joy, of long-lasting relationships.
It demeans, and that's the thing. You know, why do you think the Nazis made the Jews go naked? You know, it's demeaning. And this is just glorified demeaning, and shame on The Independent, and shame on Channel 4 for daring to suggest that it's anything other than shameful. The abuse that will come from this, this is abusive.
You can see how this is going to be taken and misused into teenagers.
Well, it's not just that, because what we've got to fight against now is hardcore pornography in the hands of 8-year-olds in terms of their phones and so on. And that is going on. What's taboo to you is just not taboo to me. Do you want to make a deal? There's nothing I can't steal. Yeah. It's just about living. So make it strong, make it quiet. One other thing, you may find this a little bit upsetting, and certainly I would advise, if you've got youngish children, switch off at this point. Just one other thing I do want to look at. Are you aware of what GSA is?
GSA? No, you're going to have to... What's GSA?
Okay, it's the new one. Now, we warned you about this, and people said, don't be ridiculous, it's not going to happen. But it is already happening. GSA is the term that is given for genetic sexual attraction. In other words, incest.
Yeah.
And there is a case of a mother who's 36 years old, her son 19 years old, who have openly said that they are having a love affair and they are demanding the right to express their love and all the rest of it. And they are prepared to take that to court. They're prepared to go to jail. She herself has said that she is prepared to give up rights to all her other children. I actually don't want to discuss this any further. I find it totally nauseating, but I also find it completely logical in terms of the view of sex and sexuality and humanity that we've been discussing earlier in the program.
If it's just a physical need, then on what basis can you object to it?
Yeah,
other than your own personal icky factor. That's a blatant example of it. But because families are now so broken, you can easily see why in their current society things like that are going to happen unwittingly.
When we warned that this is the kind of thing that would come up, people go... The standard practice, you mention it often, Al, the salami tactic, that just slice by slice.
Yeah.
And we said, you know, this will lead to this, to this, to this, to this. There are many people who will listen to this and who will go, yeah, but you cannot equate all the other things with this. Actually, you can, because they come from the same premise. Our premise is simple. Our premise is obey the maker's instructions.
Mm-hmm.
You move away from that, then everything's up for grabs. And it's inevitable that this kind of thing will happen. That's all a depressing note at one level. What's not depressing is that God is on the throne. The devil will overreach himself, as he so often has done. We've still got the gospel to proclaim, and it's still powerful, and it still works. And we will see you next week.
Yo. We're part of a culture that really loves to hate us. Every chance they attempt to isolate and debate us. It's not that they don't like us, it's just they don't like God in us. It's common knowledge, and oddly enough, it makes a lot of sense to a lot of us. We completely understand, because we used to occupy the same space and lived in a similar type state until we tasted of God's grace. So we continue loving this world that so easily rejects us and passionately press past the lack of their cultural acceptance. And as if there weren't enough problems for us gaining influence, we keep fighting over the issue of what's too worldly of a Christian to make a difference. So no matter how you paint it, or politically campaign it, whether you water it down and drain it, it's really all the same, ain't it? It's the same frustration, same constant segregation. Christians living like aliens, trying to relate with citizens of a different nation. What always makes for a better presentation than bark and bite is a proper understanding of living life filled with salt and light. So we walk this fine line of walking in light of God's kindness, and live with a sense of worldliness without the fear of compromising. Loving God and neighbor until Christ comes to split the sky, or die in this society, hailing Jesus as Messiah.
Yep.